Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Welcome to The Why with Dwayne Wade. I am honored to be able to sit and have a conversation with a legend, icon named Pat Riley. Riles, thank you for taking this moment.
You kidding me, man? Come into my office here, my presidential office downstairs, where you entertain everybody, just tear it apart and set up. You and I look good. Where are you up there?
I feel good being in the main chair. This is the main chair right here, Pat.
Yeah,
I feel
it's a good chair. It's 21 years old. But Dwayne, anywhere, anytime, we can sit down and chat, you know.
Yeah.
Anytime.
So last time we seen each other, let's start there.
Yeah, okay.
It was at the Hall of Fame.
Yes, it was.
It wasn't your first time there. But question to you, when you were able to have players, you've had a lot of players going back to Magic and Kareem and James. When you've had all these players who have these great careers and then they end up in a Hall of Fame moment, how does that feel from your eyes sitting there in those seats watching your players up there?
They're so unique. Yeah. All of the players that become, you know, Hall of Fame players, they're unique athletes, very, very talented, you know, all of them high IQ players, but all of them, contrary to maybe public opinion, you know, they're grinders too. Mm-hmm. They really grind. Mm-hmm. And so all of the people that I knew, that I coached, that made it into the Hall of Fame, I knew their past. I knew their history, where they come from, and maybe what it was like. Maybe I didn't live it, but I knew it. And to see them up there, it's such a sacred moment for the individual that even family members don't understand. And it's the pinnacle. So if there's a legacy, and I don't really believe in legacies.
Really?
I don't. That's a narrative by somebody else who wants to create a legacy. I understand I've been part of teams that have legacies, and I've been around players who are, you know, have a legacy. But when you're standing there at the Hall of Fame, and I'm watching, I gave a speech, you gave a speech, it was incredible, and it brings tears to my eyes because I know that's the last thing that we sort of do.
Yeah.
And getting the acknowledgement and the recognition for a career, but not just a career, for a life. Because those people who elect you into the Hall of Fame don't know what you had to do to get
to get
the first level. The first level.
Right.
And once you get to the first level and you get recognized and you're hungry, you say, is this all I got to do to be great? Or is this all I have to do to be recognized is play basketball? And then we get better and better and better. And so that final recognition is one that, you know, very few people have. Yeah. I mean, you have one, I have one, you know, but all the players that we hang from the rafters here, it's just an incredible feeling to see, you know, to see. I get very melancholy when I listen to the players that I coach speak. And it was wonderful.
You know, it does actually feel like that. Like when I took the stage and I took a minute just to look out, yeah. I was like, it's going to be other great moments in life. But from basketball and everything I put into this sport, this is the last moment like this. And I just kind of like took that deep breath and took it in, you know?
Great. And that's what I've noticed, you know, over the years. I remember when I went in, and I love them to death, and we always used to have fun. And so they gave us 7 minutes. You had a 7-minute speech. That's all you had. There was no teleprompter back then. And so I was the very last one of 11 that gave speeches that night.
Wait, yours was 7 minutes?
No.
Oh.
I had it at 7. And then Dick Vitale, who I loved to death, was right before me. He went 37 minutes. So I'm going with my 7-minute speech here. And you know, Dick was great, and he went off and had a great speech. And then when I went up there and I looked at the audience, it was like 3.5 hours.
Were you last?
I was last.
Yeah, so like me, we were last.
And so I messed my speech up. I didn't really give a great speech. I had a good speech, but then I messed it up because I started to go rogue. You don't want to do that at the Hall of Fame.
You had that blue card up there, didn't you? You had your blue card.
I had my blue card right there. I had like everything I was going to say in order. I had it, you know, thank yous. That's it. Just thank you to everybody. And then I went off.
Yeah.
You know, which I had a tendency to do when I spoke to the team. Yeah. I would just divert. But it's it really is a special place, and so there's not much more you can say about it. You know, I look at it as, you know, the final thing for me in my career, but you know, as a coach, but you know, I continue on, you know.
Yeah. So are there glaring like characteristics when it comes to players that can be capable of being on that stage one day that you look for when you're, you know, trying to build team around a certain kind of talent? What are those characteristics?
Well, I think you see it almost immediately. I mean, I think players see it in other players. I think you know, GMs and presidents that draft, you know, or sign. I think you see it being incredible talent. You see that, and then when the whole package is refined and honed, and a player needs 2 or 3 years of experience in the league, even if they're talented. You know, you see something unique. So the one thing that always, you know, for me, you know, was, you know, the integrity that a player had in getting better. Would they really work to get better? Yeah. I remember the first year that you came here as a rookie, and I remember Stan working with you from half court to each elbow, working on your handle behind the back, whatever it is, going left, going right, and pulling up on that jumper, going all the way, and just over and over and over. And so, you know, once you see that in a player where he's already great, he's already gifted, he's already talented. I saw you, you know, in the Marquette game. And then you arrived in the second year, you got hurt, but you really arrived in the finals.
Yeah.
That was the breakthrough. And so every great player has a real breakthrough moment when their back is so against the wall.
Yeah.
And you said, I'm not going out like this.
That's when you find out.
Yeah.
That's when you find out what you're made of.
Scored 15 in a row. But that was a magical time. And that's why I always say that at that time, in those moments, every player is the greatest player in the world. Over a period of 2 months, the playoffs, 6 weeks, whatever it was. Yep. And that's where you had landed at that time.
BIW.
Your third year. Third year, you were the greatest player on the planet, man, and everybody knew it.
I used to get those those text messages from you before games, and it'll, you know, it'll start with BIW. Yeah.
Little Pearl.
Yeah.
Little BIW.
It set me right, though. You know,
I know. That gives you a mindset. Yeah. You know? You don't have to give a long text to a player. Most of the time, a player look at a long text, they just won't even read it.
I think, but like the BIW, best in the world, that's the responsibility of those initials for me. It wasn't just go out there and score a lot of points.
No.
What I look at as best in the world to be that, so many other things that I have to bring to the game and bring to my teammates.
Sure.
And so I took pride in those those three letters because it was like, all right, like I need to be a leader. Yeah, I need to I need to defend tonight. I need to do more than just, you know, highlight reel. Yeah. And so I took a lot of pride in those letters.
Well, it all comes, Dwayne, the process of real leadership. And it's very simple. You know, leadership is an interactive relationship, you know, whereby you get put in a position, you get hired, players vote you in, you just rise to that position and you take it and to get a result.
Mm-hmm.
That's what leadership is. It's an interactive relationship whereby you do these things to be in that position, but we get a result, and that result usually is winning in, on your part. And so, but to be able to grow and to smooth all the edges off of your game and your personality, the first two or three years in the league, you arrived probably in the third year where it was complete, and it lasted for the rest of your career.
Yeah.
And you made adjustments, and you had to make adjustments throughout your career for the personnel that we had coming in. And so even though your best scoring years were after Shaq left, you know, I mean.
I was getting to the money.
The MVP years, those were the real MVP years. We just didn't have the kind of team that we needed.
Yeah. I'm not going to even go there. I was going to go to my team that I was having a ball and knowing you ain't got a chance in a lot of games. I remember one game we were playing the Lakers.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, Earl Barron was my center, and I had, you know, these kind of guys. And Kobe looked at me. They was trapping me.
Yeah.
And like, I was like calling for help, and he just started laughing at me. He was like, yeah, you about to go through it. You know, like go through what I went through. Good luck.
And that helps.
It does.
Absolutely. It doesn't humble you. I mean, it makes you more angry. I mean, you used to get angry. You would be seething, you know, and well, I can't do it all, but I do need a little bit of help. And they gave you as much as they could. They could always give you what their level of talent was and what I allowed them, you know, to do around you, you know, as a coach. So
but some of those are your favorite years, though, too. You know,
yeah.
Like everybody thinks on the outside that the championship years automatically has to be your favorite.
No, no.
But some of those years where you're playing with guys who are maybe not at that level that, you know, like a LeBron or Shaq, those become some of your favorite seasons because you get so much more out of those sometimes. Right. Like you squeeze all the juice out the lemon in those teams, and you see you learn a lot about yourself. You see a lot of growth in your teammates, and so sometimes you walk away like, you know what, we didn't win, but this was a successful year from that standpoint.
Right. No. Yeah. Well. As you said, you know, you squeeze the lemon, you get exactly what's inside of it, lemonade, okay? And I always used to use that analogy that if you squeeze a player when there's pressure, you get exactly what's inside also.
Yeah.
And you don't want lemonade. You know? And so pressure has a tendency to change over the course of a career, a season, and then especially when you go through adversity, like you went through, won the championship, separated your shoulder, surgery, you know, rehab, the Olympics, you know, all that stuff. And then, you know, we draft bees.
Yeah.
I love Mike. Man, what a talent he is. Yeah, what a talent.
I mean, to this day.
And I wanted to keep him when we got the big three, but we had to move him and Mike came in. But that team was where you could almost, you know, use it as a canvas and how you're going to get to the next level. And I think that team taught you how to sort of get to the next level also by having to share the court.
You walk in a lot of rooms nowadays, and you've been doing it for a very long time.
Yeah.
And you talk about, like, leader, right? A lot of people talk about leading and being a leader. How do you actually do that? How do you actually take that first step to say, you know what, I'm going to lead. I'm going to stand up in front of a group of men, women, and I'm going to be king. I'm going to be leader. How do you do that?
Well, it's an attitude first. I mean, and it's born out of, I mean, I wasn't a leader. I was always a guy that you know, was on the, you know, bench as a player. So I knew how to follow leaders. I knew how to take direction. I knew how to sort of deal with my role. So I learned a lot, you know, about not being a leader or seeing what leaders really do, coaches and players, in my career until I became a coach. And so I was always good at clinics. So when I went to a clinic, I was good. I could teach drills. I could talk to kids. Mm-hmm. And so I had this inside of my brain about X's and O's and moving things around. And I remembered what coaches used to say to me and stuff. And so, but when Jerry West pushed me through the door in 1981, November 9th or whatever it was, 1981 or 18th, and he said to me, this is you. This is yours.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to be the head coach of a $100 million franchise. And Jerry Buss was very, he was saying, what? Yeah, Pat never coached a day in his life and things like that. So when he pushed me through the door and I went home that night and I said, Chris, I'm going to coach the Lakers for the next month until they find somebody else. I said, I don't know what I'm going to say to him tomorrow. And she said, you know, why don't you keep it simple? You know, Chris is a prayer warrior, you know, and so, you know, we've been together 55 years. And wow. She said, house divided against itself surely will not stand. That's what she said to me. Start there, which is a biblical verse, obviously, and because we were in disarray and dissension and all that stuff at the time, and that you're either with me or against me.
Mm-hmm.
You're either with us or against us. So that's the message that I just walked right in with that message. And then I started to talk about where we had to go. And so I always believed, Dwayne, that when you're in a position of leadership as a coach, I always had to figure out what I was going to say to the guys. You know, the next day, you know, pre-practice, mm-hmm. post-practice, pre-game, halftime. I thought about all these things. I used to write down little words about, okay, this would be a good little place to start maybe at halftime if we're up or down. So you got to have something to say to them that might resonate with them. Some won't like it, some will. And then when you go directly at somebody, which I didn't have a problem doing that because yeah. I think it was the truth.
Yeah.
And that was criticism, constructive criticism, but a lot of players would resent it. But I felt that I had to get to that truth. I remember when I was coaching Zoe, and I was pushing him real hard in practice one day, and Zoe was the best. He never said anything. He just worked.
He worked hard.
So I shouldn't even just went after him, but I went after him one day. And not in a real negative way, but I went after him hard because I wanted to motivate him to motivate the other guys. And so he gave me the FU. And I said, so, everything comes to a silence, you know, in the practice. And we're over at LaSalle at the time. That's when we played the Miami Arena. And I looked at him and he looked at me and he said, should I go? I said, where? Should I leave the practice floor? I said, you're right. You're not here. You know? And so he walked into the locker room and on the way out, I said, I yelled at him. I said, Zoe, if you ever say that to me again, that's fine. I just want you to teach me something as to why you said F you to me. Okay. Teach me why. I can take it. And he came into my office after that, and he would tell me exactly what he thought as a leader that I was doing that was disrupting the players. And yeah. So I listened to him, you know, like the conversations I used to have with you guys. You
yeah.
know? I got a funny story about you, but I won't tell it now. But anyhow, you got to have something to say.
What I say,
Dwayne? I had stuff to say every day, you know. So you got to have something to say as a leader every day to your troops, but not to overwhelm.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple. 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings. That frustrating thing your mom does. Or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Wade today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Wade.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
What do you think about all these things that have come out about your motivational speeches? Like, some of them are real, some of them are not. Like, people say you've tied bags over your head.
They're all real.
I just needed you to say
it. You saw a few of them.
Didn't you see a few? Yeah.
I dunked my head down.
You dunked your head in a water bowl thing? Yeah.
But I think I would do them to get their attention, one, because, you know, it's hard to keep a group of guys' attention for 82 games for, Jesus, 9 months and practices and everything. And so every now and then, or to make a point. You know, I can remember, and this came from Jimmy Johnson. You know, I remember I brought a 2x4x12 into the locker room. A 2x4.
Where you get this from?
I don't know. I just got it.
YouTube?
No. And so I brought the 2x4 in the locker room, and I placed it down. All the guys were ready because we had a rule. You had to be taped ready, dressed, and everything ready. And then you got to rush out of there onto the court. And so they all looked at the 2x4, and I got on the 2x4, and I walked across it without falling off it, balanced myself, walked right across it. And I said, well, somebody else can come up and walk. And a couple of guys came up and walked across it, and they laughed. Oh, I could do it too. I said, what if we put that 200 feet in the air? That now is spanning two buildings, 200 feet in the air.
Changes it.
Changes the whole thing. Yeah. It's called fear. Yeah. You know? I'm not doing that. You know? Here it's easy, but up here is where you have to play. And so, you know, my whole theory about that is that you can play on the floor, but if you want to beat Dwayne, or you want to beat Michael, or you want to beat Kobe, or you want to beat any of these guys, you got to meet them at the rim. You got to get up there at the rim and meet them there. Otherwise, they're going to dunk on you and embarrass you. But also, a subtle message was sent about, you meet somebody at the rim, what happens?
I mean,
what happens? It's a collision, man.
Yeah,
somebody's going to end on the floor. That's right. And I had one rule. I said, if you meet him at the rim and you take somebody out, you got to go out with them. You don't want to hurt anybody, but you got to meet him at the rim.
Yeah.
Michael, you got to meet him at the rim or it's over. And so that's why playing up here, playing on 2x4x12.
That changes everything.
There's a little fear, yeah.
Down here to up there.
So anyway, I would think about some of these things and I would talk to either Stan or I'd talk to, you know, to Bob or somebody and I'd say, you know, what do you think? Oh, that'd be great. Go ahead and do that. And Bob said, that's stupid. That'd be stupid. They're going to laugh at you. I said, well, maybe they need a laugh or something, you know, like that. But I remember ours with you, but I'm not going to get into that anymore.
when the cameras were off, we were talking, going back to your Laker days for a minute. When the cameras were off, we were talking about Jerry West, who you reference a lot throughout your playing career, obviously going into coaching. But we talked about one of the main pillars of this Heat culture, and it's the best condition.
Right.
And so you talked about how, as a player, you had to make sure that you were in top shape and condition.
Right.
And a lot of it was to prepare the other best players, which is Jerry West, to be ready. Right. Can you talk about that? Because now I know where we got all this conditioning from and all this
hard work. Well, that's one of it. But the other thing was, you know, it's the fight or flight. Syndrome, because I had tremendous fear that I wasn't going to survive and have a job. So there were no-cut contracts back then except for stars, so I never had a guaranteed contract. And so I was told by Bill Sharman when he came to coach the Lakers in 71-72, he came over from the Utah Stars in the ABA. And of course, you know, he's a former Celtic, and he brought Casey Jones with him, and Jerry West calls me on the phone and said, I can't believe that Jack Kent Cooke went and hired Bill Sharman and Casey Jones, who beat me six times in the finals in Boston, you know? So this was like the Boston Celtics and Red Auerbach coming to coach the Lakers. And so he was really upset about it. But he realized how great a coach that Bill was. So Bill sees me in the summer, calls me in for a meeting, and he says, look, I don't know how this is going to go, you know? And I'm thinking my career's over with the Lakers. He said, but if you will come to training camp and if you win the mile, he used to have a mile race,
okay,
and then you run all the sprints and you win all the suicides and you play defense against Jerry and Gail Goodrich and Jim McMillan every day hard and Elgin Baylor. He said, if you do that and show me that, he said, I think you can make the team and help us as a defender. And so that whole summer, that's what I did. I got in the best shape of my life. And I realized that I wasn't in great shape. And then I got into the best shape of my life. I went to training camp. I accomplished all those things.
Yeah.
And I made the team. And so I said, if this is all I have to do to make the team, then I'm going to do it. And you know what happened? The residual reward of that was I didn't play for the first six or seven games.
Yeah.
And then I started to play. He called my name because I was in shape. And he sent me after Frazier. He sent me after all of these guys, Earl Monroe. And, you know, it's like meeting somebody at the rim. Yeah. My job was to survive, so I manhandled them. And they used to let you hand check back in the day. And even though they'd still score on me, I would do things. But my conditioning always kept me in the game. And then he got me into the rotation. And I became part of what they called in 71-72, the Magnificent Seven. I was with Flynn Robinson and myself. So that is why I carried that with me.
Okay.
Best condition. But you know as well as I do, you could not have played at the level you played and the way that I coached you or anybody else coached you unless you were in top shape. Top shape. You just couldn't. You couldn't be efficient.
Yeah.
And you were the best conditioned athlete, you know, one of them that we've ever had here. And so, and the results showed that.
How do you, like, telling someone, get in shape.
Right.
Okay. How do you know that you, like, how do you know you're getting in shape? Like, how do you know you're at that level? Like, what did you do to, because you said you thought you were in shape, and then you got in shape.
Well, you know, I mean, you just, no, I mean, I used to run
pushing yourself past, like,
Yeah.
Your comfort?
I didn't have any like monitors on me telling me that stuff. I just, you know, I could see it. I had a, you know, believe me, I had a six pack. I did sit ups. I used to run in the sand. There's this long 600 foot hill on Sunset Boulevard by UCLA. I'd run up that and run back, go into the gym and play, run the steps, whatever I could to push myself.
Yeah.
I just knew I was in shape. And it saved my career one time too. You know, one of the great stories nobody really knows about was
talk
in
to me.
71, 72. So Jack Kent Cook reads this story about the street ball player, a really great player in New York in Rucker, the Rucker League and everything, a guy named Joe Hammonds. Okay. He was called the Helicopter. And so there was some noise around the NBA back at the time that Joe Hammond, who never played college basketball, was going to come off the streets and play in the NBA somewhere, and that the Lakers were interested in him. So we're flying back to New York to play the Knicks, and we get out of the cabs at the hotel. No buses back then, cabs. And Casey Jones comes up to me, and he says, go up and get dressed and come on back downstairs. We're going to go to practice. I said, I thought we had the day off. So I come downstairs, Bill Sharman, Casey Jones, myself, get into a cab, and we go to a gym somewhere. Mm-hmm. Walk into the gym, I look across, and I see Joe Hammond and a friend. And so Casey says to me, you better be good today. because it's a one-on-one deal.
Yeah.
And he was great. He was a talented, talented player. Absolutely, better than I was,
yeah. You
know. And so I said to Bill, I said, could we warm up for like 10 minutes first so we can get a good sweat? I just got off a flight. And I said, him too. And so we started running suicides. Okay, now let's do some shooting, get warmed up, okay? And he started to get gassed because he wasn't in any kind of shape I was in. Then we played one-on-one, and, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he won some, I won some, we went, okay, can we go set, run, run? So it's a full court game. And so we get back in the car, go back to the hotel, and I'm like worried to death. Casey calls me on the phone. He said, don't worry about it. You know, I mean, we can't bring Joe, you know, to LA.
So it was him or you? This was that kind of workout?
I think it was, you know, but the story goes, if you Google it up, and I did, Joe Hammond said he kicked my ass, even to this day. He said, when I worked out against Pat Riley, they sent Pat Riley in to work out with me, and I kicked his ass, and I didn't want to play for the Lakers or whatever it is. And I never got to meet him. I wanted to meet him again somewhere just to say hello to him. And it sort of reminds me of the game that I played in 66, you know, Glory Road game against Texas Western. I became very good friends with all those guys.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to got back with Joe, because those were the moments some of us go through, you know, from that standpoint. Yeah. I don't know why I got into that story, but I did.
No, I'm glad. You said, hey, not a lot of people have heard that. No.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today
at purdueglobal.edu.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Look at that photo right there. Bob, put that photo up.
There it is.
Who is that guy right there?
Well, look how cut I was, man. I mean, in shape, body fat was probably 5%. Beard was perfect. Sonny Bono look. That's what it is.
Look at that guy.
Yeah, look at that guy.
So and did you get a chance to pick your number back then, or you just got a jersey?
12. No, I was number 12.
Did you pick 12, or they just gave it to
no,
you?
No, I picked that's what 12. I don't know why, but I picked 12. I had a jersey. I was 42. 54, 42, and then 12 was my number.
Yeah.
You know, but you see this wristband right here?
Uh-huh.
Guess what? Because my hands are so small, is that underneath that wristband was a bunch of stick'em. So I'd always put stick'em, and I'd get all over my fingers so I could handle the ball.
Yeah.
And it used to really upset all the players. Like Jerry West knew when I was
because the ball would be
yeah,
sticky.
He didn't like it. You know? He says, and he'd give it to the official. I say, no, Jerry, I need it. And he said, throw it to the official, and then they started finding. And oh, you can see it right here. You see,
yeah,
you see it, it's right over there. Stick them, so I could handle the ball. And the other guy that used to use it all the time was Don Nelson. He was the same way. He used stick them all the time.
So how do you go? I mean, this is a good looking guy. So we go from this good-looking guy, but then we get to the Pat Riley on the sideline phase of life. The Armani suits and the how did you develop this character right here? Where did this character
that's
come from?
That's who I was.
So this is who you was without being on a sideline on the Lakers.
I mean, that's who I became in like 78, 79 when I was a broadcaster.
Okay.
So before I was always sort of nattily dressed, and my dad taught me at a young age that when you go out of the house, be groomed, you know. And so I always had that in me.
Yeah.
I just didn't have the money to buy any clothes, you know, back then. But we found a tailor in L.A., myself, Jerry West, Happy Hairston, and then everybody started to go to this one tailor, and he started making the suits and stuff. And this is long before Armani. And so I just believed that if you're the head coach and you're going to be put in front of a team, in front of 20,000 people,
mm-hmm.
that a leader should, the first thing a leader should have is he should have a presence, and he's got to be able to communicate, and he's got to be able to deal with real adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the three things. But the presence is important. And so looking the part, you know, I mean, they don't want me to come out here and look like some guy that was wearing these big collared shirts in the 70s or 80s or whatever it is. I think the fans want to see somebody who's respectful as a leader. And the players also, from that standpoint, you know. So I wasn't trying to show up. And then all of a sudden it became something else. It became bigger than what it was.
GQ magazine.
I never tried to do any of that stuff until 88. So between 82 and 88, I never did anything commercial-wise. And then I did too much. I did too many things.
Yeah.
Even when I went on to New York. And that wasn't good because I think some of the players got upset that I was doing a lot of stuff and they weren't doing things. And so I stopped doing things. You know?
So we talked about that a lot in our meetings. You always would say, keep the main thing. You know, when I start getting these endorsement deals my time start getting spread it all around, you always tell me, keep the main thing.
Right.
Because you can lose yourself.
You have to. Yeah.
In the midst of, mm-hmm. you know, of all the lights,
right.
you know, that comes with you. And I've always kept that in mind. Like even, you know, even through it all, it's like, all right, what's the main thing?
Yeah.
Is it family? Is it, what is the main focus?
Mm-hmm.
And so.
Well, that's a perspective that I think anybody in your position, anybody who becomes really great at something in a profession where all of a sudden the outside world wants you. They want a piece of you.
Yeah.
You know, to promote their products, to travel, to wear their shoes, whatever it is. And I think that's one of the great things about today is that players have an opportunity to really, because it's a short career, theoretically, even though you could play, you know, 20 years or 8 or 9 or whatever it is, that you have a chance to really create generational wealth in a way with the outside stuff. So, but I think most players are very, very mindful that continue to be great, that this is a part of it. Okay, so if you want 8 days of filming and 6 days of photographing, and I got to move all, you know, you got to really negotiate that stuff down. Otherwise, it will distract the hell out of you.
It'd take over.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So we, perfect. I was just about to go to this moment. So let's go to 2003. We got this photo right here of Zaire and I when we came here to this arena. Now, the story goes, Pat, and I tell the story, and you've told the story, that you kind of became aware of me when I played against Kentucky.
Absolutely.
It's going back
to
your school.
Well, before that. But that was the game. Yeah.
That was and this photo right here is, I mean, let's say weeks later. Like, let's just go weeks later after I have my triple-double versus Kentucky.
Yeah.
What did you see in me? I mean, I know I wasn't the first pick in the draft, but I was the Heat's first pick in the draft that year. What did you see in me as a fifth pick that make you take that chance on me as a player?
Well, at that time, we were really desperate.
We had Kron.
I love Kron.
Shout out to CB.
You know, Kron was he was the guy that fell in the draft. He was supposed to be picked fourth
he
and
went
fifth
tenth.
Because he had a knee. He went 10th. So he fell to us, and I said, wow. I mean, we have Kron Butler. And I loved his attitude. I loved his backstory. You know, I mean, God, Kron is, to this day, that's why he's coaching here. And not because of that. He's, his integrity, his grit, his life, and what he can teach our guys is incredible. And so we had Kron. You know, we had Eddie. We had Brian. And you know, so we draft you. And we got, and then we got another guy that came in with you that year. But when I saw you in Milwaukee, we were playing the Bucks, and I had to go across the street from the hotel and get on. I was on a treadmill or a bike, and they had the game on. And so I'm watching the game, and I'm pedaling my ass off and, you know, trying to get a sweat and all that. It's cold as hell. and I just saw something special. And I say this because, you know, greatness stands out. It just stands out. And there are a lot of great players running up and down that court. Yeah. Great athletes, great players, other players who are very good. Mm-hmm. And who was your teammate, the big guy?
Rob Jackson.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I liked him too, you know, the way he played. But you just stood out, Dwayne, and you dominated. And I could say, I didn't know how big they were. I said, his hands are huge, you know, the length of his arms, all the things that I think great athletes need in this game to dominate. I don't care what sport it is. It's, you know, you had it. And, but I saw the fierceness also there. And so I was sold at that time. But at the draft, the night of the draft, there was this story that went around that I wanted to take Chris Kaman.
Yeah,
because we needed a big. Because Zoe was gone. Mm-hmm. You know, Zoe had left the team, and so we needed a big. And Chris was there. I didn't know. You know, we had the fifth pick. If Chris was going to drop, or you're going to get picked early, it was LeBron, Carmelo, and who was third?
Well, right? Darko went third.
And, Darko.
Well, Darko went second.
He went second.
Carmelo
yeah.
went third. Yeah.
And so now it's when Chris Bosh went up to
Chris went fourth to Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto. Yeah. Then it was our pick. And everybody thought I was going to take Chris Kaman, who is a good player. You know, he's 7-footer. He had a nice career in this league. But, you know, I mean, one thing I always did was keep my cards very close on draft night. Very close. Even the guys inside. Okay, we'd all meet.
Uh-huh.
Everybody give their opinion. Give me your list. Everybody had their list. And I'd take it all in. Then I'd meet with Chet. Okay. And Chet and I would sit there and go over it, and usually we would come into an agreement. So, no, you were the best player. You were the best player for us at that time.
Yeah.
And I thought you were the best player in the draft at that time, too. And then guess what? you got to play with Chris and you got to play with LeBron. You know, I mean, like 5 years later, I said, wow, you know, this is Nirvana. But yeah, that's what I saw. I saw right off the page, he's a young kid, he's a mature kid. And then when we started to dive into the whole history of Dwayne Wade, then, you know, you just learned something about, you know, why, you know, you got to where you were and how hungry you were. And so that picture coming in and holding Zaire.
1 year old, Zaire.
Just 1 year old. Just, and it seems like yesterday, Dwayne, you know, it was 2003. And here it is, we're, you know, already 20 years later. So it's just like time flies. Yeah. I said, where does it go? And I get sad. It makes me sad that I said, how did those 20 years already go with Dwayne? You know, and all the other players that I coached that, you know, it just went by so fast. The game is, and the seasons are so fast that you sort of forget everything and leave it in the dust until you retire and you say, how did it go that fast?
Yeah, you know? I can't believe I'm sitting on this side.
You're interviewing me and I'm sitting here.
I can't believe, I'm like 5 years from removed, sitting on this side.
I know.
Unbelievable, right?
I still think you can play, you know. Yeah. They should have an old man's league now.
I can play. My knees don't want to play with me. I can hoop.
No, you just put these some braces things, right? on there. Put some braces on there. We put the ACL big one that CB braces, used to wear. Right? But I've always said that, you know, the 3-on-3, what is it called? The big three. Yeah. Is to have the Hall of Famers, or the truly great players only, maybe have, you know, six teams and play 3-on-3. Half court.
That'd be ugly basketball.
It'd be ugly. Probably, you're right.
We're going to cut off part one right there. It was amazing talking to Coach Riley. It's always amazing talking to Coach Riley. But getting a chance to talk to him about getting drafted in 2003, one of the most important moments for me, but also one of my favorite photos, is having my son Zaire there with me as well. And coming up in part two, we're going to talk to Coach Riley about how Heat culture was created. This culture word is something that everyone wants to know about. What is the Heat culture? How is the Heat culture? What does it mean? And so we will hear from the man himself who created Heat culture, Pat Riley, coming soon.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.